Ojibwe scholar and author David Troyer grew up on the Leech Lake Reservation in northern Minnesota. He has a new book out that is, as he says, a history of Indian lives, not Indian deaths. It's called The Heartbeat of Wounded Knee, Native America, 1890 to the Present, and it's published by Penguin Random House. David Troyer joins us now. I should say welcome home to you, I think. I know. Thanks so much for being with us. As we're talking today, though, it is, 20 below zero. So good times here.
Oh, my gosh. I always follow the weather back home and live vicariously through you all. I miss home. Even in this weather, I miss home. I miss it constantly.
Yeah. Well, let's start our conversation today, because I was really struck by you writing about what it meant to you when you read Dee Brown's book, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, and how the ending of that really has a lot of connection to this book.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually in the beginning of Dee Brown's Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, and I read that book when I was in college, and I read it when I was out in New Jersey, and I was missing the Northwoods and the Northland, and I was really homesick when I read it. And so I would clutch at any kind of book about us that I could find as a kind of, teddy bear or stuffed animal that I could sort of clutch and remind myself of home and Leech Lake and all that stuff. And when I read Wounded Knee, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, Dee Brown says in the very beginning, you know, this is about the Plains Wars, and I focus on Plains tribes, and I start in 1850, and I end in 1890 at the massacre at Wounded Knee when the culture and civilization of the American Indian was destroyed. And he goes on in that prologue to say, and if you happen to visit a contemporary Indian reservation and you notice the poverty and the squalor and hopelessness, I hope by reading my book you will understand why. And on one hand, I felt good that Dee Brown thought highly of us and wanted to support us through remembering our history. And on the other hand, I felt sort of cut down and diminished and silenced by his announcement of our premature death, because we're not dead. We're not gone. We're not simply the victims of history. We've been making history too. And not only that, you know, Leech Lake, my reservation, isn't only or merely a place of suffering. Yes, of course, there are many problems that attend our modern existence, but there's also humor and intelligence and competence and capability and creativity and all this stuff that's the Indian world that I know and that I love. And I didn't see that vision of Indian life represented in any book, and so I decided ultimately to write this one.
So you tell a new story. What if Dee Brown had done something like that? What could his book have been, how, if it were different, what could that do for the culture of our country?
Well, I really feel, and I'm too much the literature professor to feel otherwise, that how you tell a story shapes what kinds of stories can be told. How you tell the story of our past shapes our present and shapes our future. So we have to be very careful about what words we use and what narratives we resort to. If we only tell a story of death and diminishment, then our future will be correspondingly bleak. But if we can find a new way to tell stories, if we can find a new narrative other than the tragic mode, you know, through which to tell stories of Indian lives, then I think we will have a remarkably and markedly different future. So the story I tell is not just one of survival. It's one of surplus and plenty, and maybe a surplus and plenty of suffering in some instances, and that those are facts of the past and of the present that we have to contend with, but also a surplus of creativity and ingenuity and intelligence and competency and strategy. I tell a story that of Native Americans as not just in America, but of America. I try to create a story in which we're not just the victims of history, but we're the makers of it. We've made ourselves, and we've also remade the country. We've affected what this country is. We're a part of it. So that's what I've tried to do, at least.
I learned a lot from your book, and I really was struck by you are telling a story in a different way, because this is history, but this is also journalism. This is also memoir, and we meet people, you know, from long ago. We meet people from now, and I wonder if we can move into that. We'll talk about some of the people that you profiled that you know.
Sure, yeah.
Let's talk about your cousin Sam and why you wanted to write about him.
Yeah, I have a cousin Sam. He's my first cousin. And we grew up, you know, in the way it is at Leech Lake, that your first cousins are really in cousins in name only. They're really your siblings. And often, those are the people you'll spend most of your childhood with. And seen one way, Sam has had a really tough life. I mean, he lost his mom. He lost his sister, my cousin Vanessa. He suffered a lot of losses, and it would be tempting to think of Sammy's life as just one of loss and of mistakes and things like that. But he's also lived more than that and more creatively than that. And he found that he had a skill as a fighter, as a mixed martial arts fighter. And that's something he's not only good at, but he's brilliant, actually, at it. And he found a way to sort of, you know, express himself and to deal with his past and to deal with his losses in a way that's generative and not destructive, if that makes any sense. And so, like, you know, Sam, for me, is really, like, I'm really proud of him, and he inspires me to sort of accept our own shortcomings and to move forward and to sort of, you know, to dare and want things. Learning how to ask for more and hope for more than the state would let us have is not so easy for people who've been dispossessed for quite a long time. And Sam does that. He asks more from life than life would sort of seem to want to give him. And that makes me incredibly proud to be his relative.
It's David Troyer. We're talking about his new book. It's called The Heartbeat of Wounded Knee. I was actually a little dismayed that I did not know before your book the story of a Helen Bryan. I feel like I live here in northern Minnesota. I should have known this story. Tell us who she was and what an impact she's had.
Helen Bryan is not just a local treasure and a Leech Laker. She's sort of, through her example and her perseverance, one of our leaders and role models. And she has done more to sort of shape the lives of northern Minnesotans in general, for example, than most other people. So Helen was, in the early 70s, she was a young mother of many kids living in the community of Squaw Lake on Leech Lake Reservation, you know, very poor. She worked, I think, for a Head Start program, and she bought a used trailer with some insurance money from her brother, who was a Vietnam vet, passed away. And she's sitting in her trailer with her husband, and some guy comes rolling up in the yard in a truck and then takes a bunch of pictures of their trailer, then rolls away. And then about a month later, she got a property tax bill for, I think, in total, $147. And she thought to herself, well, that's not fair. I'm a native person living on my native, land. They shouldn't be taxing me on my home. That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't sound right. And she goes, I think I should fight this. And, you know, maybe most of us, even if we were as broke as Helen was, might have just been like, oh, forget it. I'll just pay it. I don't want to wrestle with the county. She's like, no, that's not fair. I don't think I should have to pay that. That doesn't seem right. And so she took her case to a legal services team and based in Cass Lake. And they said, okay, we'll take your case. And her case wound up in the Supreme Court, and she won. The Supreme Court ruled that that the county and the state didn't have the right to sort of, you know, attend to or levy taxes, and that tribal nations still controlled sort of all the civil aspects of running their nations, which weren't just limited to taxes. So her case paved the way for tribal gaming as we know it. By sticking to her guns and by fighting for what she thought was fair all the way to the Supreme Court, this, you know, pretty poor native woman from a small village in Minnesota has affected the fates and futures of Indians across the country. And so she's a real hero of mine. I really admire her so much.
David, this is, like I said, this book is not merely history. There's also something in it that is personal for you. So, and it must have been a lot of work, a lot of digging to find some of the older stories especially. But what has this process been like for you?
I mean, it wasn't an easy book to write, but it was pleasurable. I dug around in the historical record to find information, and it dug around in other books and archives to find information. And I also went out across the land and interviewed dozens of Native people of all ages and walks of life because this book is really about Native American life, not Native American death. And so if it is going to be about life, I have to talk to people. But also, if I wanted to tell a better or different story, I had to look at myself and interrogate my own biases and look at my own life as a way to free myself from the stereotypes and old kinds of storytelling that I might be engaged in. So I had to dig deep in myself too. And, you know, it wasn't always comfortable, but it was really productive. And one of the most thrilling parts of writing a book like this was that I got to meet and get to know so many incredible people who were, to me, so inspirational and so funny and so smart and so interesting. I felt like I had to go back. Basically, the writing this book for the past years was a process of, you know, going back to a school, I guess, but a different kind of school. And I feel really lucky that I was able to write this.
It is a brand new book because you do mention one of the coolest things going on in Minnesota right now is Peggy Flanagan. And I think everybody was really excited by the inauguration where she had as big a role as the new governor-elect had then. And she made some statements about, you know, that she made a choice at some point to not, it's not that she walks in two worlds. She is an Ojibwe woman. And I think once you heard that, you realized how you hadn't heard that in the public in that way, in terms of politics or in terms of the state
right.
of Minnesota. What do you think about Peggy? I guess that's a weird question.
Oh, no, it's not a weird question. I am such a fanboy of hers. She's incredible. Someone asked me about Charisse Davids in Kansas, about what that meant for Native people in Kansas and across the country, that we have, you know, Charisse Davids and Deb Haaland from the Southwest, you know, now in Congress. And the same question sort of is related to Peggy. Like, not, of course, it is an amazing moment for Native people and especially Native women that Peggy won the office of Lieutenant Governor of the state of Minnesota. But it's also, and more importantly, maybe, really good for the state of Minnesota. Who better to represent all of us than someone who understands intimately the ways in which the government is poised to help us, but with the wrong policies and the wrong leaders can hurt us and can hold us back? Who better to address the challenges to access to higher education, access to healthcare, access to capital, and to power, really, than somebody with understanding of the historical consequences and effects, you know, consequences of being denied access to those things. As a Native American, she understands that perfectly. And so she's perfectly poised to lead all Minnesotans into a kind of future that is going to be good for all of us. Like, I can't emphasize enough sort of how important it is for Native people, but how important it is for all the people in Minnesota, and how thrilled I am. I'm sending her a book, so she'll be reading it soon, I hope, in her spare time.
From number one fanboy, I like that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's David Troyer. The book is called The Heartbeat of Wounded Knee, Native America from 1890 to the Present. Thanks so much. I sure appreciate you talking to Northern Minnesota today.
Oh, it's the next best thing to going home, so thanks for having me, and I'll be home soon.